Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Cara Burrell YouTube channel and the To Me Did What podcast. I am your host, Cara Burrell. Sometimes I go by Nuance Ho. I'm joined by my co-host, Ryan Fisher.
Hello. How's it going?
And we have a very special guest on today's episode, the one and only Alyssa Grenfell. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Making the most kick-ass videos out there right now, which also makes me feel better because I don't want to talk about Mormonism anymore because I got to the bottom of that Tootsie Pop or whatever the analogy is. I cracked it through this whole Tim Ballard thing. I have figured out what lies at the center of Mormonism, and it turns out it's not true. So I lost interest. So
yeah, that's a single sentence for a lot of sentences that I've said over the years, which is just it's fundamentally not true. So
it's a not
once
true
you know
thing.
That, is there really that much to dig into? I guess there still is, but
oh, there is. Well, I was going to say, in some seriousness, I do need to talk about how this Tim Ballard project that Ryan and I have delved into for the last few months is really a passion project. One, because we want to, try to hold Tim Ballard accountable and make a space for the victims' voices to be heard, but also because it's really emblematic of a wider problem in so many different arenas with Mormon men and hero worship within the church. So Ryan and I have dedicated, most of our time now to making this To Me Did What podcast, and not so much on Mormonism, but it is still a microcosm of an apex of so much that has to do with Mormonism. And since you are such a wonderful Mormon expert on all the things in and out of the church, we thought we would bring you on and just kind of get your take on Tim Ballard and go into some of the reasons that I've collected why I think that he's a bad Mormon, and is he even Mormon anymore at all? So
yeah, after you finish this video, definitely check out the video that is on my channel, Alyssa Grenfell, where these two definitely gave an amazing overview of Tim Ballard's entire story. And whenever we were planning on this, I actually had a memory that I met Tim Ballard, which was kind of funny because it was such a brief interaction. I really tucked it back into the back of my head. But back in 2017, when him and I believe his wife both kind of co-received an award for OUR's work, I was at the event and they were doing a kind of meet and greet after they got this award, and I shook his hand, and it was wild to just see how many people were flocking around him with such sincere adoration. And it was an awards thing, so lots of people had received awards, but there was nobody that was just getting kind of hounded by fans in the same way that Tim was. And I had never, even when I was still a believing member at that point, but I hadn't really followed him that closely, but I was very familiar with a lot of members who wore his t-shirts and saw the movie, and just the level to which people saw him as kind of a modern day hero, that I can't really overstate how much people really respected him and saw him as just doing the Lord's work to that extent. So I'm excited to discuss the Mormon aspect of him, because even though nothing about his mission might seem Mormon on its face, it feels like Mormonism was so deeply baked into every single thing that he did and has done. So I think it's important mm-hmm. lens through which to analyze him.
As far as the kind of things that you have been aware with Tim Ballard, whether you were in the church or outside the church and you spoke to him having like this halo around him, you said that was after you'd already kind of left the church that you saw the people admiring
him. Yeah, when I met him, that was the same year we left the church. So 2017 was like the year that we were processing kind of leaving, but we were still members at that point.
Oh, got it. Mm-hmm. So we just did an episode together with like a nice overview that's going to be on your channel coming out on Friday, right after Thanksgiving. So I'm curious from your perspective, from going from seeing this man who had so much admiration and you were probably questioning what his real motives were, what has been your perception of him thus far as, an ex-Mormon type of content creator? What is your read on him? What do you think of him?
Yeah, so I didn't, like I said, I didn't follow his story too closely when I was still a member of the church, but I knew a lot of people who really loved him. And so I think after I left the church, I had some experiences where I would be with other members of the church, active members of the church, and my husband specifically had a negative thing to say about Tim Ballard, and the members who heard that were very dismissive and very protective. It was kind of like a gut wrench. It was kind of like a knee-jerk reaction to kind of defend Tim Ballard in that conversation, which was pretty interesting because I feel like even though my husband Jackson, who has been on my channel before too, he's also not a member, he's an ex-member. I think that to have an ex-member criticize Tim Ballard before all of the shit really hit the fan, it was seen as almost like, well, you don't want to see the church succeed. You don't want to see a member who's doing good. And I feel like his concerns at the time, which were kind of, if I recall, this was, you know, before all of his scandals came out, so several years ago at this point, but his concerns were basically like, hey, this man is not operating within police enforcement, within law enforcement, but he's kind of trying to steal the job away of law enforcement. He's kind of a vigilante. He's doing something unregulated. So it was a fairly passing concern. But even in that moment, when he kind of brought this concern to believing members, they, I think, coded it, as members often do, as an attack on the church and attack on the church's image. And so I think it was interesting to then, a year or two after that kind of heated conversation and back and forth, to then see all of the, you know, not just what he had had a concern about with Tim Ballard, but then all of this other like avalanche of information mm-hmm. about all of these crimes that people are coming forward about, and to see just that, you know, this to see what had been just unfettered admiration turn into the members and just no longer bringing it up or talking about it, or we never kind of got the follow-up conversation that was like, wow, he was kind of a bad dude, maybe this guy should have been this should have been regulated a little bit more or under more scrutiny. But I definitely think it was interesting to see the mood shift from complete defense and, hey, we love this guy, he's doing great work, to just, we are never going to talk about this again, and we're never going to kind of acknowledge the fact that this was pretty problematic and it did legitimately lead to some real concerns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bet that is really common. It's common in my family, in the exact same kind of story. And I'm curious if there's anybody listening who wants to leave a comment about, you know, bringing these concerns to a family member, because to believing Mormons so often, yes, it's like you mentioned, same thing with my family, that like, you are just making the church look bad. This is, you're going out of your way to try and, you know, spin a story to make it seem like he's worse than he is. But people have really buried their head in the sand and not wanted to actually face the facts that somebody that was upheld within the church by the church leadership, Deseret Books, like number one author, could possibly be guilty of anywhere near as many crimes as he's been accused of. So I'd be curious to hear if anyone else has any comments on that as well. Ryan, do you have any other questions for Alyssa?
Well, yeah, it's just so fascinating to me to see, you know, everybody around me got behind him and his message. You know, people were posting things on Facebook and social media all the time, you know, to support this guy, support his organization, support anti-human trafficking. We got to capture the bad guys. And then it comes out that he might be the bad guy. And everybody's like, what just happened? Like, okay, let's not talk about this. And let's just like ignore it. And all of that passion just like immediately evaporated. And what I would hope would happen after like all the women that came out is that that passion would be turned into anger in a way that people would be like, hey, we were duped. We were misled by this guy. We need to figure this out. We need to right this ship. But it sounds like from your experience, you're not seeing that.
So far it's been silence from what I've seen, but I think that my guess is they just said, oh, well, we probably should have just been giving additional donations to the church, you know, instead of giving this random person our money. You know, we should just recenter our focus on the gospel of Jesus Christ. We should recenter our focus on, you know, attending the temple and going to church and having our callings. And I feel like instead of, which is always what you see happen in the church whenever they change, you know, when they got rid of the priesthood ban, whenever they've changed anything in the temple. It's never like we have this moment to kind of debrief and say, right, here's why the change was made. Here's an apology for the people it harmed. Here's kind of an opportunity culturally to have a shift and talk about it. That never happens in Mormonism. All it is, yeah, is suddenly the person is not on the stand, or suddenly the person is no longer having articles published about them, or there's just, it's almost like overnight the entire, you know, it's not even like there was when they just changed the garments, I'm sure you guys know, to be tank tops. You know, some members can wear tank tops with the tank top garments. It's not like
I'm wearing my garments announced right now, actually. Just kidding.
Yeah, wait.
Yeah, you guys. Yeah, your new garments look great on both of you. I feel friendly, like the odd man out.
So it's not like they announced that in, you know, a general conference and then said, next Sunday, we're preparing a special lesson so that everyone can discuss the fact that they've changed this. Mm-hmm. No, it's just they update the website with a new, yeah, design, and they just like drop it and walk away because they know that they it's actually worse if they ever have to deal with all of the feelings that are going to come out along with the change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People are going to start asking, yeah, questions.
Yeah, there's no room to process that. Yeah. That's like an interesting point. Not allowing a space for people to heal for things that may have been harmful to them in their life. And this Tim Ballard seems like the perfect example. They acknowledge that he's a bad guy, but they've never taken any responsibility for the 10 years that they spent building him up. And the hundreds of firesides, the tens of thousands of, maybe hundreds of thousands of books they sold in their bookstore with the forewords from Glenn Beck and Elder Ballard and others, like they've taken absolutely no responsibility for that. And what's so sad about that is that there's women that are been hurt and been abused and been manipulated by this guy. And the church and its leaders are like, yep, that's not on us. And it's been really hard for me to watch. And I think a lot of other people, I know a lot of people have lost their confidence in the church over this Tim Ballard stuff because the church pushed him so hard for so long. And then they're not taking any responsibility for that. Like not even a second press release that's encouraging victims or people with information to come forward or support the women in any way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you, yeah, explain that.
Yeah, the church could do so much more to support the women right now that are so vulnerable telling their story and going through these court cases. Yeah, the church definitely has a responsibility, but
and those women are active, or I don't know if any of them are active now or if they have left, but I'm sure you guys know that. But it isn't like, it reminds me of in The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, there's two women who are very active, garment wearing, temple attending, and the church is fully threw all of the women on that show completely under the bus in the same way. They're all, mm-hmm, they all just got, you know, completely said like, oh, this TV show is awful and no one should watch it. And even in Heretic, one of the girls that was in Heretic gave an interview where she said, I have members who are friends. I'm no longer active myself, but I wanted to give like a dignified portrayal of a sister missionary. And you can tell from her interview that she feels that she really did the church a service by humanizing sister missionaries and by portraying, mm-hmm, them as faithful and brave. And she seems like she feels that her portrayal was ultimately a net good, and she took the role because she kind of has respect for Mormonism and religion. And the church similarly just fully throws that movie under the bus and says this is, you know, encouraging violence against women. And I think so, like, it's just been interesting in the last few months to see how systematically that even though members are positive, even temple attending, garment wearing, how quickly they are, if these women are associated to anything disfavorable, to just say they don't they're not part of our religious tradition, and they don't get to claim us, you know, and putting out press releases, mm-hmm, and stuff. And I think it seems very common that the church almost is more likely to protect the images of not so great people who, I don't know, it just seems like they've been throwing a lot of women under the bus lately. I think as I've talked in all these different settings about all these different women who that seem to be almost like they're trying to be good Mormons, and the church is still just refusing to stand by them even though they've given so much to the church.
Yeah.
Or if even exactly acknowledge right. harm, not even willing to acknowledge harm, not like support them is one thing, but not even to acknowledge that harm is taking place. And yeah, it's a big slap in the face.
Yeah. So I think that's a good segue to talk about, you know, how the church views what a good Mormon is, how the normal member, the average everyday member that you'd interact with in a ward, because obviously there is a whole spectrum of what it means to be Mormon. I mean, Sunstone Symposium is a great like nonprofit that has all kinds of different speakers, and one of their taglines is like, there's more than one way to Mormon. And with the different break off sects of Mormonism since the beginning of the church starting all the way till today, the main, you know, Brighamite branch of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, headed up by President Nelson in Salt Lake City, being the main one that like the three of us came from, that we're talking to, that most people are familiar with, and what it means from the average member of that church to be a good Mormon and the rules that you follow. So I know, Alyssa, you've talked a lot about the rules that it takes to be a good Mormon. And what is some of the pushback, I'm wondering, because before I go through this list that I've assembled of things that I can prove that I'm going to go through with some evidence in a minute of how I can tell that Tim Ballard is not a good Mormon. And most people, if they knew these things about him, would probably not claim him as their own. But I'm curious from your perspective in the videos you've made about the rules that you followed when you were Mormon. You know, anytime I've talked about those rules, I get so much pushback from the comment section of so many people saying like, well, I didn't have to do that. That was a choice that you made, or things like that. So in your perspective, what does it mean to be a good Mormon, and what does it mean to be a bad Mormon? Can you handle that question?
I don't know if I can fully handle it, but I'll do my best. I think that, you know, a lot of people's religious upbringing in the church feels very contextual according to their family. And so I think some people really feel like everyone thinks that the way that their family was Mormon was the right way to be Mormon. And everybody else's kind of version of Mormonism doesn't get to claim the same level of authenticity, which is, I think, to me, why sometimes if I share certain rules that my family followed, people will say, oh, like, that's so crazy. You know, that was just your family. And for some of those things, I can fully appreciate that it probably was my family. Like my family, we didn't call our coffee table a coffee table. We called it the living room table, because even saying the word coffee was kind of almost a sin, basically. So so it's, to me, that's not something that I would expect to have found in every single Mormon home. And I can appreciate that that's a family rule that isn't something that was being pulled straight out of scripture. But then there are a lot of rules that are very scriptural, are very doctrinal. I think sometimes too, people don't actually just know the history of the church as well as they think they do, myself included, because the history of the church is so long and complex. But another example is, you know, my family, we believed that playing with face cards was not the best. It's basically kind of like gambling. And I saw a comment that was like, that you're just making that up. That's not the case. And if you gave me a second, I could look it up, but who said it? But but even though it's no longer taught, it was at one point part of, you know, some leadership's expectation to say, hey, and it might even be Spencer W. Kimball in Miracle of Forgiveness, face cards are kind of the appearance of evil. And so there are a lot of rules that have kind of come in and out of favorability in Mormonism. And because I was born in the 90s, and because I was born to a strict family, my comprehension and understanding of the rules is very tied to the decade in which I was born and the family I was born in. But I, you know, there are tons of rules that even someone born in the 70s, 60s, and 50s, like even how, like, I had never read the words in the temple ceremony for the penalties of sharing the signs and tokens. So, you know, cut out your tongue, rip your breast asunder, may my bowels fall out of my belly, whatever the exact words are. I never had to say that. So if I go on to, you know, TikTok and say, hey, you used to have to promise to kill yourself if you reveal the secrets of the temple, a lot of people are going to say that is fundamentally false. And the reason they'll say that is because they quietly changed the rule in the 90s. And when they went through the temple, they never had to say that. It's not because it's not true. It's because that's just not the Mormonism they're familiar with. I realize because now I'm giving a really long answer to your rule or your question. But what I'm trying to say is basically that the rules are very much in flux purely because the church often changes the rules because of continuing revelation. And also they can be very family-based. But there are some rules, for example, like drinking coffee, which have been part of the temple recommend questions, and you can point to as saying, if you drink coffee and you can't get a temple recommend, can you really say that you're following the Mormon rules? I don't know. So I think there are some rules that are still fairly cultural. There are some rules that are very decade by decade. And then there are some rules that have held fairly consistent over the decades that I think most people, no matter their age, could agree on. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he breaks rules from every single one of those three categories.
Well, yes. Breaks one from every category. Yeah, like the temple recommend interview questions and stuff. But that when you mentioned the family thing, that brings up an important part of like personal revelation. And there's so, it's so interesting. One of my favorite like things within Mormonism that is just like so seedy and weird is that like anytime you don't like something, you can have like, well, you have personal revelation, but the leaders will always say, as long as the personal revelation matches what they say, what the leaders, and it comes back around to the house always winning, you know. But in Tim Ballard's case, his brand of Mormonism is something that I was raised in, which is a very like patriotic, very heavily right wing, very heavily into a lot of different kind of like trippy spiritual, you know, like, I don't know, Ryan can speak to it. He's been to more Book of Mormon evidence conferences than I have, where there's just a certain brand of Mormons that are really into like energy work and casting out demons and essential oils. There's just a little off-brand that I was kind of raised in. So when I left the church and then eventually started going to the Book of Mormon evidence conferences where Tim Ballard would speak often, that's where I was like, this is why he found his crowd within this version of Mormonism, because people are so inclined to believe like this extremely fundamentalist version of Mormonism, but it seems like a paradox because it also has so much leeway with personal revelation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like there's so many different, even within the mainstream Mormon church, there's a lot of different sects or kind of mentalities or cultures. Like, I feel like my family, we never used essential oils. We didn't really practice any of the kind of mysticism elements that I've seen some sects of Mormonism, even, you know, some cultures within Mormonism practice, where they're doing a lot of, you know, I think it's kind of the Tara Westover, right? Westover of Educated. That's right. She wrote the book Educated.
Yeah.
The woman that wrote Educated, who I believe her name is Tara Westover, she definitely comes from that branch of Mormonism, where they seem to have gone to a mainstream Mormon church ward every Sunday, but they never had any modern medical care. They didn't ever go to the doctor. They gave birth at home. They used essential oils, and all of those things are still completely compatible with being a righteous member of the church, and they're also still very spiritual. But if you don't choose to engage in using essential oils or having a child at home, it's not like you are disfellowshipped or even that anyone would bat an eye. It's just there are so many different little cultures of types of belief within Mormonism.
Mm-hmm. Straight up. Yeah.
No, well said. Like, yeah, you're super articulate at expressing these complex cultural psychological ideas that are hard to put into words.
My family's brand of Mormonism, I would call it very bureaucratic. We're very rules oriented, very, you know, we're studying the manuals, we're following the rules in the manuals, we're listening to conference and taking down what does the speaker say about the ways that we should be living our lives? And then we are very much putting it into practice. And so my family was much more like a letter of the law type of Mormon, that we're trying to be as perfect as we can in following the rules, which is, I think, why I kind of have this comprehension of really specific understanding of what the rules are, because that was kind of the way we worship is through following the rules and knowing the rules. And, you know, it's just a very rules-based faith practice versus what I think yours was, which was very feelings-based mysticism, you know, getting in touch with Mother Nature almost. I don't know if you would call it that, but kind of like a much more spiritual approach to worship that is still and probably more true to Joseph Smith's version of using his little wands to find the water and stuff. I think that's probably more indicative of Joseph Smith Mormonism, and mine was more of like Brigham Young's Mormonism, which is hellfire and damnation and rule following and doctrinal focus.
Yeah, I'm so fascinated by the dynamic that can coexist there within Mormonism, within the same ward, within like the same family sometimes. But yeah, the what's interesting that you mentioned the difference between Joseph Smith and Brigham Young is, yeah, you hit the nail on the head there, because with what Tim Ballard was into, so often he would point to different, when he's doing different things that are outside the bounds of what a typical good Mormon would do, like not wearing his garments or drinking or X, Y, and Z, he would point to examples of Joseph Smith, like Joseph Smith drank wine, you know, the night before he was murdered, or Joseph Smith didn't wear garments. And if you want to find a loophole or have some leeway within the church, you can point to the founding prophet of the church who's still getting into heaven. You can point to him, but it's to point to, you know, that your salvation is still found in following these rules and principles. You only need to look to, you know, 100,000 speeches that have ever been given at conference. Like, you can really be a cafeteria Mormon in that kind of way. But down to some of the most unhealthy fundamentalist actions that people like Tim Ballard, or, you know, people who do offshoots from Mormonism and start their own polygamous cults, can also do. So what I find really fascinating, like, especially in the early church history, that, you know, the priesthood was given to Black members of the church, and it wasn't as defined as it is today. And so we have evidence that, like, Tim Ballard's own wife, Catherine, that he like believed that she had the priesthood, that she could give blessings to their 9 children. And that's not something that you would find in your typical Mormon ward anywhere, that a woman would even admit to ever giving blessings, like priesthood blessings, to their kids. But like, that's something that happened within my family that like my family didn't really bat an eye at. And there's just these really interesting hush-hush, like different mystical beliefs that people kind of hold within themselves, they believe are really precious, that they wouldn't like share. But it also kind of makes you wonder, like, well, why are you within this container of Mormonism at the same time? But that is still where the covenants are found. But within that container, so many different belief systems can still crop up, and so much harm can happen.
I think it definitely comes from being taught the Joseph Smith story, and that he had this ability to go into the woods and get direction from God, see God in Jesus Christ, and say, start your own church. And I think that you can't grow up hearing that story over and over again and not internalize that you kind of get to do that too. And maybe you're not going to take it to the same level of like inventing your own church, but you do, I think you're taught there's this tug and this push and pull between following the church HQ general conference, you know, new era version of Mormonism, and then also the Joseph Smith story, which is very self-determining and very much, hey, you can get personal revelation, you can, you know, God will speak directly to you about your life. And so there's kind of a push and pull there that I think the church is kind of constantly trying to figure out how to walk the tightrope of. I mean, even the conference talk recently about temporary commandments is very much trying to kind of amend this understanding of sometimes we might need polygamy, and sometimes polygamy isn't a commandment, and so we have temporary commandments. And I think if you said that to any mainstream Christian, that God has temporary commandments, they would be like, what are you talking about? God is eternal. Yeah. God is everlasting. Mm-hmm. But Mormonism, because of our doctrine of continuing revelation and continuing restoration, we have this very malleable understanding of the way God can direct our lives.
Well, that's said, because we're told specifically that conference talks is living scripture. And it replaces, you know, I was told, like in my own priesthood quorum by our bishop, you know, trying to urge us to go to conference and listen to conference, general conference, that he said that, you know, a living prophet's words trump a dead prophet. And so that you know, that was ingrained in me. And like you're saying, it becomes living scripture, it becomes living commandments. But then when it goes badly and they need to change it, it's like, oh, well, that wasn't a commandment. That was just policy. And policies are open to change. You know, they won't have it both ways.
Yeah. Or he was just speaking as a man. Right. And it's actually, I mean, it's, I feel like the church's strongest, niftiest tool is continuing revelation. It's, I think, what's allowed them to be so nimble through all of these societal changes and still have so many members just give them adoring love. Because if you can wield the tool of continuing revelation, everything you can say with a straight face. And then tomorrow when you say something different, you can say it with as straight of a face as the day before. And you nobody ever gets to poke holes in it and say, well, you can't be a flip-flopper. You can't change your mind doctrinally, but they get to just say, oh, it's continuing revelation. And it's so mm-hmm. convenient. It's almost like the most brilliant part of Mormonism, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. That belief that the members believe that their leaders get continuing revelation from God gives them a free pass to change things, to say things, to do things that seem contrary to previous revelations or whatever. And that same conditioning was employed by Tim Ballard to the people that he worked with. He was a cult leader over this cult that was considered somebody that was led by God. He totally claimed prophet status. He would be constantly said, you know, talk about inspirations, God's telling me this. He even believed and told me on one occasion that that Abraham Lincoln was appearing to him, not visually, but his spirit would appear to his son and was in his house and was giving him the real story of why he was converted to the messages of the Book of Mormon. And invoking very religious language to the people that he oversaw in his organization. And he had, in a lot of their minds, prophet status or revelatory status. And so whatever he says goes. So what was employed by the Mormon Church to their members, that relationship structure, was the same relationship structure he built. And then he used that to manipulate them and get away with doing horrible things to people. So we're going to tap Alyssa Grenfell as a cultural icon and expert witness on Mormon culture, thought, religion, everything related to that, to tell us what she thinks about Tim Ballard's behavior. So I'm excited to see this.
Let's give him are we going to score him?
Yeah, we did a great game on my channel. This is not one of the funnest videos that you've ever made. Don't say no. It's a true thing. The collab that you and I did here in the studio of who was a better Mormon. We did a purity off, me and Alyssa. It's a great video. And we scored each other, and Alyssa was a better Mormon, I think it turned out at the end.
Yeah, I think we did decide. But I honestly think you should have won that because you stayed in for so much longer. I feel like whoever gives the most decades of their life to the church gets the award. I'm fine with that.
It's like saying that I like finished the 5K, but I walked the whole time. I felt like it's like, but who really finished the 5K if you ran, but I walked, you know, anyway. So,
okay, I'm ready.
He drinks alcohol a lot, that he lies, bears false witness, you know, it's against the temple recommend questions. That he mocks the garments is another one. He mocks the sacred temple clothes behind closed doors. I have evidence of all of this.
I mean, I'll be honest, it's pretty easy to mock the temple clothes, so I gotta throw him a bone with that one. But
yeah, no, I'm honestly
a
like
good Mormon
based.
Never does. Wait. Drinks alcohol. No, a good Mormon does not drink alcohol, and definitely not a lot of it.
Lies a lot.
That is, I think, one of the Ten Commandments, isn't it? Thou shalt not bear false witness. So that's one of the easiest, most straightforward commandments.
Mm-hmm. Even if it's in a documentary made about yourself, you're still not supposed to lie.
Even then.
What about the temple garments and the sacred temple clothes, mocking them, making fun of how stupid they are?
That to me is some of the most shocking, because I feel like if there's anything that Mormons hold sacred, it's the temple. I mean, I feel like to some extent they hold it more sacred, and as they guard it more jealously than they even guard like most of the teachings of Jesus Christ himself. So I feel like that to me is like the most not Mormon thing. Like that's like the most horrendous thing to do is to mock the temple and to talk about it openly and poke fun at it. So I think that might catapult him into a new category of not Mormon.
Yeah. Like if I was Mormon, I'd be like, what are you doing and saying about my sacred temple clothes? I wear them and you get to mock them. Interesting. Attacks the church's PR department. This has to do with right after that Vice News article came out and he went AWOL on the PR department.
Yeah, I think a good Mormon never attacks any part of the church, whether it's the leadership or the PR department, which is kind
Right.
of the same thing, honestly.
What
Yeah,
about getting
true.
yourself excommunicated? Seems like you're
Not
in for
very
trouble
Mormon.
there.
Not very Mormon.
Going
It's
on,
kind of a, yeah.
uses psychics on operations to talk to dead relatives and leaders. Do you know anything about the handbook about what the church says about the use of psychics being?
No, I didn't even know that they had a statement about that
So,
at
yep, the church
all.
says do not employ the use of mediums or psychics, just go to your priesthood leaders, which
Which
in
is
the
a psychic by another name.
So follows the prophecies from psychics, as well as Tom Harrison. So there he's going outside of the bounds, basically, of what a good Mormon should do.
Approved
And
priesthood leadership sources. Yeah.
yeah, nope, not allowed to do that.
So uses the apostles' names for basically saying that, hey, this couple's ruse thing that I know you're feeling uncomfortable with because of the way I'm molesting you. Why don't I just go ahead and get my bestest bud, Apostle M. Russell Ballard, on the phone, and he'll tell you that this is fine and you should be fine with what I'm doing to you. Stuff like that.
I think most members wish they could name drop an apostle, but it would be more like I saw him at the Pizza Hut than it would be for that reason.
And he gave me a wink and a nod.
Yeah,
Says he's
Tim has
good.
accused Kara, you and me of being bad ex-Mormon people, but I've never used Elders Ballard's name or an apostle's name to make money, and I don't think you have either, so
I mean,
shoot,
maybe
he's
you've
got us
used
beat
his
on
name
that one.
negatively.
To make money by saying the quotes of things he said, and now the money and the checks are coming
Yeah,
in.
I mean, this is the
Oh, I
same
know.
man that said, wear a little lipstick, don't walk around looking like men. So I don't know if I
Oh, I
necessarily have a
just
lot of
saw that.
deference to Elder Ballard anyways.
Let's make so much money off of that quote right now, Alyssa. Bam. Yeah. So
Just
Tim
saw
also
that quote
says,
for the first
good.
time, and that is so embarrassing. I'm
Oh
so
my gosh. The
ashamed
yeah,
that
that
he
quote
said that,
is
telling.
he's literally also saying it from a pulpit. Like maybe if he said it in some in any other setting, but saying that from a pulpit like is it just adds insult to injury.
It's so
But
demeaning.
this is a
You girls
representative
had
of Jesus
such
Christ.
just such a different experience in young women's and young men's. I mean, the demeaning things that were
Yeah.
said to you. I'm so sorry. So sorry
Where's
that
my
happened.
message of like you hold God's power? No, instead it's wear lipstick, please.
Yeah. Don't tempt the young men by showing them your
Feels
shoulders.
quite a bit
Yeah.
different.
Yeah.
Next, have you heard that he's considering the Catholic or evangelical faith? That's not, you
Unless he's
don't.
calling it the great and abominable whore, like I was taught the Catholic Church was, then I don't
I
think he
know.
should be considering it at all. Yeah, he
Seriously,
just went there to go call them whores to their faces. No, he did not. I wish, but I'm just kidding.
I know I spent 2 years telling people that the Catholic Church in Poland was the great and abominable church led by Satan, and now they want to be part of the family of evangelical churches. And like, well, that's a
I
different
know.
message.
I apparently the F I was talking of someone who used to be in the FLDS, and they said that they learned that the Great and Abominable Church in the Book of Mormon is actually referring to the mainstream Mormon church. So it's funny that we all got different interpretations of that scripture,
What if it
which
was
there's a
referring
profit.
to essential oils this whole time?
Young
What
Living.
if? You know what I
It
mean?
probably was.
Something.
So yeah, then at church uses church firesides to fundraise for his organization and personal legal expenses. Now, I remember when I was crazy. In the church that it, when we got the church, what's the word? It has everyone's phone number in it. And it says
directory.
And it says big bold letters on the front, like, do not use this for any financial or personal gain. And they're like, we're looking at you, MLMs. And just to think all of the different ways that Tim Ballard has used his connections and firesides within the church to fundraise for his personal and legal expenses for basically crimes that he's committed. he's using his network within the church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people who aren't members don't quite comprehend just how wealthy a lot of members, like members are independently wealthy. You know, like I didn't even know the guy that created Adobe, apparently that guy was Mormon. I'm always learning some new random millionaire that was a Mormon, but there's a lot of money held within the church. And I think it's funny because the money is the root of all evil, and yet members are really encouraged, I think, in my opinion, to get as rich as they can. So Tim definitely tapped into that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So here's some dishonorable mentions as well. Tim Ballard got his semen all over his executive assistant's skirt after fooling around with prostitutes paid for by OUR donors. That is okay. Tim's version of the story. This is not me saying this is what I think is or alleged. This is what Tim said is why his DNA is there from doing that. Committed SA to the utmost levels is what is at least alleged. And then the, like we mentioned in the episode that's coming out with you, we tell the story a little bit about how his executive assistant, Celeste Boris, a victim of his, granted a protective order against him because the judge ruled in her favor that she is a credible witness. So I don't know. What do you think about, I mean, the joke could obviously be made. It makes you a really good Mormon if you can do all of that and just not get caught. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's like very Joseph Smith of him to do all of this, but also not the version of Joseph Smith we were taught. So it's somehow both very Mormon and not Mormon at all at the same time.
And we'll round this out with allegations of Tim Ballard's misconduct include, but are not limited to, using sacred tithing records to find donors, setting up a penthouse and cocaine for Attorney General of Utah Sean Reyes, taking his son to strip clubs and making him take pills, then engaging in sexual activity with prostitutes. And then there's the essay and the grape there at the end. So don't want to sweep that part under the rug. That's the big one that's in bold neon letters. But you put all of these things together. I just have so many Mormons personally in my life and out there on the internet who just they still think that this guy believes the same things that they do, and that all of the allegations are all just a bunch of dumb sluts and ex-Mormons or whatever. But I'm like, how did this many allegations either make him innocent in your mind or even still make him a believing member of your church that you have anything in common with? Like, it just is an avalanche of so much that I don't see why people are still supporting him. Is it just because I'm an ex-Mormon? All three of us are ex-Mormons and we don't support him? It's not mutually exclusive. We can, you know.
Yeah, it's very similar to, in my opinion, to Donald Trump, where even though he has all of these allegations against him, he is still definitely the choice of the people of Utah. And a lot of members of the church point to him as the greatest president we've ever had and, you know, somebody to be admired and a wonderful leader. And ultimately, it is very disorienting to have people who at the one point claim total moral superiority, then to choose as their kind of heroes these people who are kind of demonstrably immoral. So you'd think that the two can't exist in the same reality, but it's almost like similar to Joseph Smith, how, but you know, by their fruits ye shall know them. And so I think to them, the good work that Donald Trump has done is evidence he's a president of God. And it's almost like, because it's almost like you can just it's almost like you can just say all of these evil things they've done don't matter because the product of what they've accomplished is so good. We can just say, oh, that all of that stuff, that's just, you know, all these women are just trying to get famous by attaching their names to his or whatever. And it's just like the same pattern over and over again, which kind of is what we talked about in the video that we did for my channel.
Mm-hmm. That, yeah. What's the saying that, like, you know, no good thing is ever going to happen without evil people trying to tear it down. And we are supposed to, we're basically like just falling in line with that script. We're the evil people trying to tear down all the good things are happening. I'm sure there's more eloquent phrase like of Joseph that. But Smith.
Many would know his name for evil or that, whatever. Yeah. And that's like people knowing them for evil is proof they're good, which is like so strange. Sometimes like they say that when Mormons don't like my channel, I'm like, many would seek to speak down on me. And that's, you know, proof I'm doing good things because adversity is a sign that you're righteous, that, apparently.
Yeah, that's what
Tim actually believes that. Tim actually says in his Instagram that all of this pushback he's getting, all these allegations are writing the script for Sound of Freedom 3, the movie that's going to be made about him. And his followers believe exactly what you're saying, that that all of this contention and pushback and allegations against him is just proof that he's on the right path and Satan has to mount a counteroffensive because he's doing so much good.
Then don't get your DNA on your assistant's skirt. Just make it so that didn't happen. I have nothing. I have no DNA. It'd be so nice if we just didn't have DNA to work with, but we do. Well,
apparently.
Well, we will end on that very disgusting note. But basically, to wrap all of this up, Alyssa, you're amazing and you speak so eloquently and can just synthesize so much about Mormon culture and doctrine and everything down into a beautiful little package. Thank you for being on my channel and explaining all of these things to my audience, getting your perspective on Tim Ballard and more. Tell everybody where they can follow you and subscribe to your channel.
Yeah, I'm on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube at Alyssa D. Grenfell, and I post a new video every single week. I have short-form videos. My video for this week is going to be an interview with these two about kind of an overview of what's been going on with Tim Ballard from his early rise to fame till, you know, the more recent events that are covered on this podcast. So definitely follow me there. Watch our most recent video coming out on Friday.
Definitely check her out. And go ahead.
Yeah. Could I ask a personal favor before we cut you loose, Alyssa?
Yes.
Next time we really want to convert and interview Glenn Beck. So down there in Texas, next time you run into him at the produce aisle of Walmart, could you make sure that he's converted to our cause and come on the podcast and do an interview?
Yes, I am personal friends with Glenn Beck, and I'm in the process of making him an ex-Mormon. And once he's fully an ex-Mormon, the hypothetical will definitely come true.
You're a powerful woman. I totally believe in you.
Thanks.
I believe in you too. You can also see my famous stitch of Alyssa talking about the Mormon Relief Society voice, and which reminded both of us that we're friends and we should do a collab together. That's how it worked for me. Definitely. Well, Sister Grenfell, thanks for being on our channel. We love you so much. Take care and check out Alyssa's video when it drops. Bye, everybody.
Thanks.